Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If I said the sky was blue, they say no. If I said fish live in the sea, they'd say no.
With all the spending in Washington and all the uncertainty facing small businesses, including the coming tax hikes on January the 1st, until this uncertainty and spending's under control, I don't think these are going to have much impact.
There they go again. That was President Obama talking about the Republicans, who he called the party of no, during his announcement of one of his several new economic proposals. And then we heard House Republican leader John Boehner, who came out with some of his own very different proposals and denounced what the president is doing. Political tension, of course, heating up as we near November 2nd, now less than 2 months away, as each party fights for seats in the midterm elections, and efforts to improve the economy are increasingly politically charged. So we will start off today by talking about the economics and the politics of the new job creation announcements with two guests, Gus Fauché. He's an economist for Moody's Analytics, and Mark Alexander. He is a professor at Seton Hall University and was a senior advisor to the Barack Obama presidential campaign. Mark is also one of the inaugural bloggers on our brand new politics website, It's a Free Country. Check out his essay and my politics quiz and lots of other stuff at itsafreecountry.org. It's a Free Country. .org. Mark and Gus, welcome to WNYC. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Gus, first give us the economics of what the president is trying to do with infrastructure, if you can separate it from the politics. The original stimulus bill was first touted as a massive green infrastructure project, but then it changed to be lots of different things. Why return to infrastructure, and why now?
Well, I think the goal is that there are lots of people employed or unemployed in industries like construction that could be put back to work with higher government spending. So I think the goal there is to spend some federal money to get people who are currently unemployed working on these types of projects and help improve the economic recovery.
And Mark, as an Obama campaign advisor in 2008, how do you see the 2010 campaign politics of this infrastructure move at this time?
Well, I think obviously the president is concerned about how the economy is going and wants to make sure people feel stable in their economic situations, want people to have jobs, and he's trying his best to make sure that happens. And obviously the economy always plays out in such a huge way in all elections. You know, the most famous one was in the first Clinton campaign saying it's the economy, stupid. A stable economy, voters feel better about sending incumbents back. And if it's less stable, I think it's a lot harder for those in power.
Now, listeners, we want your reactions. You've been probably hearing this over the last few days, the president rolling out a series of job creation announcements having to do with infrastructure, having to do with tax cuts for business. But at the same time, he's making it clear that he's not for compromise on the Bush tax cuts for the highest income earners among us, people making $200,000 a year as individuals or $250,000 a year in couples. He does not want those cuts to remain. He wants them to expire at the end of this year. So how does this all sit with you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Gus, to the economics of the tax breaks for business. Specifically, he would let businesses quickly write off 100% of their spending on new plants and new equipment through next year. How is that different from current tax law, and what does he hope it would accomplish?
Well, under current law, depending on what type of plant and equipment you're talking about, that you depreciate that over years, so maybe 15, 30 years. And so this would make it deductible up front, which would give businesses a stronger incentive to invest in the near term. The goal is that would lead to greater business spending. I'm not sure how effective that's going to be. Business investment is actually pretty strong right now. It's up about 16% over the past year. Interest rates are very low already. So I don't think that that in and of itself is going to do much to spur economic growth.
And Mark, again, as somebody who has advised Barack Obama politically, what about the politics of this? It looks to me like he's trying to siphon off some business support from the Republicans, trying to look pro-business. At the same time, he's looking tough on business abuse and tough on what he thinks are excessive tax cuts for the very wealthy.
Well, I guess I would say that, the actions that the president's taking, he's doing these things because he wants to make sure that the country is strong economically. I wouldn't put it in the context of saying he's trying to do this to score political advantage. I think he's trying to have to do everything possible to make sure that businesses can grow. And, you know, it may be that one business grows from it, maybe that millions grow from it, but he's trying to find every possible way to get business to grow, to get jobs to increase, and that's what, you know, our economy needs to pick up. Obviously, we're in a very long downward slide that obviously there's a big collapse in the last couple of years, end of the Bush administration and into the beginning of the Obama administration, and he's trying to get things back on track, and I think that's motivated by his interest in helping the American people.
Let's take a phone call from Peter in Newark, who says he's a small business owner. Peter, thank you very much for calling.
Hi. We've noticed over the last 2 years, not only on the private side, but on the nonprofit side, it's been incredibly difficult to raise any money from private individuals. And we have to wonder whether or not it's the skittishness about what Obama's going to do with their taxes. Because while we get a half of our money from the government or from the state in terms of financing our equipment, the other half comes from rich people, you know, rich friends, rich uncles, rich, you know. The rich actually help us build businesses, and we don't feel like they're very confident about moving forward and investing.
Is it mostly because of the uncertainty with a lot of debate and a lot of change in the wind that isn't settled, Peter? We hear talk about businesses being reluctant to spend because of uncertainty over how much health care is going to cost, uncertainty over tax rates, things like that. Or is it the policies themselves? Like, people are holding back because they really think they won't have enough money if those high-end tax rates go up.
The bottom line is that they just simply don't know, and it's only over the last couple of weeks that we've started to get some concrete information regarding whether or not these taxes are going to remain, taxes are going to return.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only over the last couple of weeks that we've gotten any information about that.
So it's the
it's been a long 2 years.
So it's the uncertainty. I'm just trying to get clear on this. Is it the uncertainty then more than the actual money involved?
It is the uncertainty.
If the tax rates go up, then you think the money's going to start flowing into this kind of equipment again because people will know how much they have, but pretty much it won't affect their ability to afford it?
I hope so. I'm basically in the camp of at least extending them for a year or two while we get things settled down. There has to be a good private-public partnership with the wealthy and with the government. They have to work together. That works best for everybody. But this isn't really the time to penalize our primary source of investors, which are our friends and family, our rich uncles and friends, you know, who might help us build a business.
Peter, thank you very much. Please call us again. Well, Mark Alexander, how do you think that might sit with the president? The proposal that Peter alluded to, and we heard it on the news, that some Republicans are now saying, okay, a compromise. Let's just freeze all tax rates in place for the next 2 years and then revisit the question rather than permanently extend the Bush cuts, tax cuts for the wealthiest. Just freeze all the tax rates for 2 years and then come back and have this debate for real 2 years from now when things perhaps have settled down a little bit in the economy. Do you think that's a proposal that the president and the Democrats might be able to live with, or are they just going to look at that as a gotcha proposal?
Well, I mean, I don't speak for the president, but I think that what has to happen is the president has to make these decisions, which I think are hard decisions, But I think, you know, we've got a situation where the federal government, of course, is providing all kinds of services for us, and there's tax dollars needed to make sure those things happen. And the president has a responsibility to try and bring the budget in line as much as possible. And the question is, how are we going to do that? And I think to the extent that, that there are some who have a greater ability to pay taxes than others, then that sometimes means that, that there are different rates. And if that's going to be higher rates on higher incomes, that may be part of the deal. But just to simply kick the can down the road a couple of years, I don't know if that's going to be the solution if some hard decisions need to be made today. But I think the president ultimately has to figure out whether he can get his support in Congress for, you know, for what kind of plan he really wants.
Gus Fauché from Moody's Analytics. What do you think about that question of uncertainty versus actual economics? Do you think a lot of investment is waiting on the sidelines because people don't know the tax rates? But even if the tax rates go up for the wealthiest, that money is still going to start flowing because it's really the uncertainty rather than the rates that are holding them back?
I think it's a combination of uncertainty about what's going on with taxes, but also uncertainty about the recovery. The economy is expanding, but slowly job gains are weak. And so I think investors are to some extent still waiting on the sideline to figure out what happens there. I think that there's something to be said for waiting for a couple of years before we increase taxes on the highest income Americans. I think the recovery still is weak. I think that a tax increase would be a weight on economic growth. And I understand the need to close the budget deficit, but that's a long-run issue, not a short-run issue. So I don't think that it would be harm efforts to close the budget deficit if we wait a couple of years to raise those taxes.
David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Yeah, hi. I probably might... thinking's a little outside of the mainstream or the box, but I would like to see. I'm happy that Obama's proposing this. Let me say that. But
you mean the infrastructure
spending? Yeah, and certainly the wealthy people, and I'm going to say my family's even part of that. Yeah, they're doing fine. They're doing mm-hmm. great, as we know. You know, they've got triple the share of the national wealth. The banks are doing great. But neither of them, as prudent business people, the banks or the wealthy people, want to jump in with their investments because, you know, they've kind of won the game. They're already okay. The problem is for the bottom 95% of us. And what I'd like to see is an infrastructure program over the next 10 years that's 10 times the size of what Obama's proposing, such that we have a smart grid across the country, use all the solar energy that we can muster on the roof of every house, et cetera, a real crash program, because once the economy does start going forward, the world economy, we're going to see the rise in the oil prices that we saw when the economy was booming in 2007. So we have a smart grid that would be cutting our energy costs by 30%. We'd be employing all this 8% of people that are unemployed. Mm-hmm. We'll be building the infrastructure. It would be good for the bottom 95%. Where would the money come from? The United States government backed the banks. We are the people that are creating the money out of nothing when it's needed for banks. We should create that money out of nothing to do the infrastructure repairs.
David, thank you very much for that. And Mark Alexander on that. And again, to your role as a former Obama campaign advisor, I have a feeling the president might believe something like that in his heart of hearts. Do you? And why doesn't he just stand up and say that and propose something like that? I feel like we heard things like that from him during the campaign when the economy was crashing. And he talked about a massive infrastructure program that would be a form of nation building and would set us up with a permanent new green infrastructure for the future economy and not just put people back to work because people were unemployed, but set up the economy for its future self. And then he became much more timid about it once he was inaugurated. Or don't you read it that way?
No, I think that, you know, there's no doubt the president wants to have that kind of a broad investment in infrastructure. I think those are great points from the caller. You know, what we can do is we can work on things that will help reduce our dependence on oil, find other sources of energy, which we must do no matter what. And also, building that kind of infrastructure can make a huge difference in terms of basic jobs creation. We've seen this happen over time. And I think the president is committed to that kind of work. Obviously, the thing is he came into office, and there were certain things which were pressing priorities. You know, everything was collapsing on Wall Street. Foreclosures were through the roof for everyday Americans. We had two wars, major wars he had to deal with, and it's prioritizing. And so I think he has taken steps on this, but he has not been able to make it the number one priority yet. Mm-hmm. But I think this this is something which he is committed to doing.
Do you think he's running scared because of the politics, even on the infrastructure, the $50 billion infrastructure plan that he unveiled the other day? I don't know if you saw the headline front page of the New York Post today. It called him pothole prez, the pothole prez, which, by the way, used to be a term of endearment when Senator
right.
Alphonse D'Amato was in office
right.
in New York, and they called him
Senator Pothole
because he got a lot of money to New York to fix potholes and gave constituent service at the retail level like that. But now, derisively, Obama is the pothole prez, and it's really a front page editorial that calls it a spending spree.
So there's the
politics in 2010.
Well, I'd say, first of all, you know, he's not running scared, to use that term. He's not running scared. He is a man who has great confidence that he is going to do all he can to help the American people, and he will continually do what he can do, regardless of what, you know, a headline in a paper says. But also, I think, that is important to think about this. With the stimulus monies that we've had so far and that we have going forward, there are roads being paved today, which means, you know, the roads are better, but also means there's somebody with a job who is paving that road, and then that person actually can then go out and they can buy something, you know, for their family, or they do not have to worry about some mm-hmm. other bills that they're not going to be able to pay.
So
this does make a difference.
Gus,
we can see that people who want to put down the president will tease him, perhaps, but the reality is that there are people who have jobs now because they're doing things which help all of us, and that's an important thing to do, to have jobs for the American people.
Gus Fauché, why are so many people skeptical of that? Are you, as an economist at Moody's Analytics, skeptical, too? You've been skeptical of some of the president's proposals in your remarks today. Do you think $50 billion of infrastructure spending comes back to us in more than $50 billion of economic growth? Go ahead.
And, you know, I think people are skeptical because they see an unemployment rate that's 9.6%. I think the point is without the stimulus program that the president signed early in his presidency, that the unemployment rate would be much, much higher. It would be somewhere closer to 11%. So I think the stimulus is working, but the recovery hasn't been fast enough that people feel that the economy is doing well, and it isn't doing well. I think more stimulus spending would be helpful. I think, you know, it would be better. $100 billion would be better than $50 billion. To get people back to work and to get the economy moving again. But people just don't see that. And, you know, they're concerned because the unemployment rate is still 9.6%. They know that millions of people are out of work. And it's taking time. But I think we need more stimulus spending rather than less.
I want to put two callers on real quick back to back and contrast what they're going to say. Roberta in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Roberta. Give it to me in 30 seconds, okay?
Okay, I'll try. The stimulus, the tax cuts were due to expire the end of the year, and I think they should, for the upper 2%. They wouldn't miss it, and it would help the economy.
And they wouldn't miss it. Tony in Maplewood, you have a comeback to that?
Sure. Well, you know, it's kind of a perception. Just the way I see it is, I guess I'm an upper 2% earner, but we are two public school teachers in New York.
You and your wife?
Yeah, that make, you know, $200,000. And that shouldn't be cannon fodder for Bloomberg and Christie. It's actually, you know, 15 years in. And all of a sudden, you know, we can't afford the best place in New York, and we can't afford to send our kid to private school.
And if your income,
we're seen as the top earners.
If you're, it would need to be 250 for a couple, just to be clear. So I don't know if you cross that line, 200 for an individual. But if that top tax rate affected you, as it went up from, Gus, is it up from 35% to 39%? Is that the exact number?
I think it goes from 33% to 35%.
Okay, so that's even a smaller difference. You think that 2% percentage point increase in your highest, on your top dollar would matter to your lifestyle?
No, absolutely not. But I think the difference is it's a perception of what, you know, wealthy is in the country. Wealthy in New York City. It's very different than the rest of the country. My friends who live in Alabama, of course, you know, are amazed at the salaries we pay, but the cost of living difference.
Right, and of course those contrast the salaries and the cost of living. Tony, thank you. Very briefly, Gus, you said before that it would be a drag on the economy to raise those marginal income tax rates on the highest earners. People are really going to feel that difference between a 33% tax rate and a 35% tax rate over $250,000 in a way that it's going to be a drag on the economy?
I think it's going to be a minor drag on the economy. I'm not saying that it makes a difference between recovery and recession, but it is going to be a drag. Those people are going to have less money to invest, less money to spend. It is going to be a weight on economic growth. Given the fragile state of the recovery, I would be very cautious about that. I think over the long run, taxes will need to increase for wealthier households who are running enormous budget deficits. There's no indication that that's going to change over the long run. But I think in the short run, it would be a mistake to take steps that could weaken the recovery.
And just to be very precise about these rates, we looked it up, and the top two individual income tax rates would go from 33% to 36% for individuals, from 36% to 39.5% for couples making over $250,000. And Mark Alexander, before you go, I want to thank you for being one of the inaugural bloggers on our brand new politics website. It's a free country. And in your blog post that we have prominently featured on the site right now, you took issue with the premise of our question. And the question was, what is broken with politics today? And what do we need to do to fix it? And you said politics is not broken today?
Yeah, the point is, and thank you for letting me have the opportunity of blogging there. The point is that politics has always been messy. We always have a tension between what people want at the grassroots and what the establishment is trying to achieve. But politics is always messy, and it continues to be messy. My concern is that politics is now, and this is what you said in your introduction, we have the way in which we see the Republicans and Democrats fighting for certain things. The politics gets in the way of governance. Well, that's a big concern. So when we don't do things, we're having this great conversation today about how to best help people with their jobs. When we don't do things to get people back on track because of politics, then that's a governance issue, actually. Our governance suffers because people are playing politics. So when politics bleeds into governance, that's a problem. Politics itself, people are always going to be pushing and shoving and trying to get the advantage, and that there's a back and forth. But when it starts to affect our governance, that's when there is a problem.
All right. And we invite everybody to read the rest of that post by Mark Alexander, arguing that politics is not broken in America today, on our new politics website called It's a Free Country at itsafreecountry.org. Mark Alexander, former senior advisor for Barack Obama's presidential campaign, now a professor at Seton Hall University, and Gus Fauché, economist for Moody's Analytics. Thank you very much for starting us off this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
And a little bit more about It's a Free Country. We have political news and guest bloggers. We have a video up there right now with our political reporter, Ozzie Pabura, and me, showing you how the brand new New York State voting machines work. We got to take them for a test ride, and I'd say there is some trouble ahead for primary day next week. I'll have a one question news and politics quiz every day this week on the site. My question today is, why is New York getting rid of its lovable old lever voting machines anyway? See if you know the answer and see all the goodies at It's a Free Country, our new politics website at itsafreecountry.org. itsafreecountry.org. And coming up next, a push to unionize car wash workers. Stay with us.